It's very heartwarming to see a QPV conference, and I hope it will continue and grow in years to come, and that I will see answers to problems that have been bugging me forever. So we left off, or after Alex's, towards the end of Alex's talk, we saw that holography, or ADS-CFD, performs non-local quantum computation in a very efficient way. And so this begs the question, but which computations can it perform efficiently? Well, whatever you can do in the bulk, in the scattering region. And this begs the question, what computations can you actually perform inside of the scattering region? Because, you know, if you could do any polynomial-sized circuit, then that would render QPV insecure. And given that we're having an entire conference about QPV, we'd hope that it's useful someday. So we should probably iron out this this question. So to do that, we need to check if you can build a universal quantum computer in an appropriate way inside of the bulk. But today, I'm going to start first with the easier question of how do you even build it inside of a QFD? So I'll start off by giving intuition for what is a QFD. So a QFD is just, it's a quantum system with some extra structure. In particular, it lives on a space-time. So a QFD in 1 plus 1 dimensions, so in one spatial and one time dimension, we can imagine as n harmonic oscillators. With quadratures phi I, pi j is delta I j. So hopefully you remember from quantum mechanics, intro quantum mechanics long ago, that a particle in one spatial dimension, a non-relativistic particle, we describe its Hilbert space as one basis state for every position x, and it has two operators that generate everything else. It has an x and p operator. So here, we'll just, so phi I is analogous to x, and pi I is analogous to p. And so we give, at each point in space, a harmonic oscillator. And instead of it being valued at a position in space, its value is going to take on what is the magnitude of the field. So for example, if I look at the expectation value of a field state versus the various locations, I might get something like this. Right, and this is, for example, an electromagnetic field near a classical state, you know, that is oscillating with a wave of particular frequency will look something like this. And it's going to have a local Hamiltonian. So it will be something like sum over pi squared plus xi plus 1 plus, I don't know, xi squared, something like this. So we only couple in the Hamiltonian nearby oscillators. And then finally, we zoom out. So zoom out to distances greater than a, so that this sum goes to an integral, and the fields become functions of space instead of lattice sites. And then we'll also switch to the Lagrangian formalism. So we'll end up with Lagrangians that look something like this. Partial mu phi squared plus minus 1/2 m phi squared plus lambda phi to the 4. So this is just a shorthand for space and time derivatives. So that's like this term, coupling nearby neighbor operators. So hopefully that's enough intuition for QFD. Are there any questions? This is a bit. This is not that Hamiltonian. This is a local Hamiltonian. This is more accurate, yeah. And then this thing here, we call the Lagrangian density, which we usually just write like this. These phis are functions of x, right? Okay. So, and then the next question is maybe why Q of t's. The main result we have right now is that if there exists a holographic model with miniaturizable quantum computer, then QPV is insecure. That's the statement that we know right now. What does this mean? This means why am I saying this? Well, we saw that the interaction really has to happen inside of a region of space that's order one in these cylindrical coordinates. So the interaction, the computer has to live in here. Has to do all of its interactions inside of there. And if we want to say that QPV is insecure, that's an asymptotic statement. So we need to be able to do longer depth computations on more qubits as we scale up n. And it all still has to fit inside of here. So we can we know that we can fit in more qubits by making G Newton small. But that's if you do that naively, that will have the effect of making the bulk interaction strength go to zero. So you have to fiddle with other parameters if you also want to make sure that you can do longer and longer computations. Thankfully, it seems to work out. There's a certain limit where it looks like you might be able to do this computation in such a way that you break QPV. So why QFT? We want to work with QFT because it's the minimal assumption that we can make about what's going on in the bulk that allows us to avoid string theory. So there will always be a certain limit that we can take in which the bulk is described by a QFT. And if we can show what we need to show there, that will be enough. So to want to make sure assumption one is correct. That's why. Okay.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Maybe it's somewhat of a naive question.
Yeah.
But, okay, so in this model, you're talking about a miniaturizable quantum computer. You're talking about some process in nature, or physically, how should I think about like what this computer is?
Yeah, so you have, can you see over here?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the QFT, if I take like a time slice,
yeah,
right, this will be, look something like this. And then, what is a computer? A computer is I can take different points in space, and they will act as memory. So if I put a particle here, that's a 1. If I don't, that's a 0. And if I put a particle there, that's a different 1, and that's a different 0. And then I should be able to pick a state and points in space such that whatever input I take, I want, I could plug it into these points in space and then evolve by the QFT Hamiltonian. And then the output of that computation should also be available at points in space. Okay. So you should have a computer in mind, right? Like this is exactly how a computer works. Yeah. This is like memory. And then e to the ih QFT. So input, and then maybe the output is somewhere else.
Question. So the insecurity of QPV is due to the versions I've heard are involving entanglement, mm-hmm. localized. How does that fit into this miniaturizable point of view?
So from Alex's talk, we got that whatever computation you could do in a region of space in the bulk, you can get a QPV protocol that implements that computation efficiently. So that reduces the problem to asking what computations can you do here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Also modulo some computers.
Modulo. I mean, it's essentially just this, right, and also that holography is right. But
right.
Yes.
Yeah, this correspondence is.
That's true. Yeah.
So maybe you put some stars on them. Makes me feel more secure.
I'll put that into that there exists a holographic model, yeah. Okay, so let's... Okay, so now we're going to build a quantum computer in a QFT, modulo the ongoing work part. But I think you'll believe me that it works. So let's write an overview of construction. Oh, God. Okay, so we start with a simple QFT, and then we get to a QFT with adjustable potential. And then we take a non-relativistic limit, non-relativistic particles guiding potential. So maybe up to here will be a bit fuzzy if you're not familiar with high energy physics, although this is kind of where the new results mostly are, but I'll explain it as clearly as I can. And then, okay, this is where the ongoing work part is. Bose-Hubbard chosen graph. And that will lead us to a universal computer. OK. So we take our inspiration from this paper by Jordan Preskill et al. BQP completeness of scalar phi to the 4 scattering. In case I got this wrong, you can look at the video. And so there they have the following QFT. Please forgive me if I mess up some minus signs. Minus lambda phi to the 4 plus j of x t phi squared. Okay, if this is not familiar to you, that's okay, because we will immediately take the non-relativistic limit and we get a Hamiltonian of n particles. 2m plus j of xi this plus equal to j delta of x minus xj. So we get n non-relativistic particles in this potential. And so if we pick a potential for, I think we can call it a dual rail encoding. So let's pick a potential that looks like this. And we will encode a zero into the left well and a one into the right well. And by adjusting j with time, we can start doing one qubit gates. So for example, we can make this lopsided, in which case there's a difference in energy. And this will apply a gate. Which gate? Delta. It will apply a relative phase gate between 0 and 1. OK, so you could also do similar tricks to do to get a rotation around the x-axis, around the Pauli x-axis. And you can also do two qubit gates by bringing two wells close to each other. But I won't get into those details because of time. But there's an issue with this model as far as we are concerned, which is this j is totally ad hoc. We just assume that we can pick whatever j we want. But when we get a QFT in the bulk of holography, it's going to just be a standard Lorentz invariant QFT. So there's not going to be, we're not going to be able to choose so easily all of this extra information into which we're going to encode the circuit. Right? This potential moves the qubits together in such a way that particular gates are done. And so that means the circuit is encoded into the potential. Are there other questions?
Yeah, sorry. The non-relativistic assumption is just so that you can keep the mass constant all the time?
It's just so that there's a simple Hamiltonian that we understand what its ground states look like.
Okay.
We know if we have one particle that, and I have a potential like this, that the ground state is just going to be the ground state of a harmonic oscillator well, approximately. Yeah, it's because this thing is kind of, we don't know how to deal with it. This is more. The whole game is going to be jump from one system to another, like restrict to a regime where you understand it better, and so you can get more control over it. Yeah. Okay. So that's the problem. The problem is this J, which I call the hardware here. So we need to get J to emerge from inside of the model. So how do we do that? So in our model, we pick a scalar field, or a real scalar field that's self-interacting, and then a complex scalar field that interacts with the real scalar field with m much bigger than m. And now do a change of variables. So OK, what's the idea here? There's two fields. The phi field is like the data field, where we'll store information. And there's another field, s, that's going to end up becoming this hardware. So we will pick s to be in a classical field configuration. And tune parameters such that the effects of quantum fluctuations from that field will be suppressed. And then we will choose it in a particular configuration that will give us this external potential that we need in order to do computations. So how do we see that that's possible? We'll take S goes to S naught plus delta S such that delta plus m squared not is 0. I can do that. Why not? It's just a change of variables. What's that going to be? Let me call this thing L phi. This thing will go to L phi. minus, okay, or plus, no, minus pi squared s naught squared. Ay, ay, ay. Minus, there's a g phi squared delta s squared minus 2 g phi real s naught delta s. And then I'm missing the kinetic term, minus delta s box plus m squared delta s. Okay, so this is kind of looking good, because what Lagrangian do we have? We have the original phi to the 4 Lagrangian that we have here, and then a phi squared coupled to some classical function. So this is a background. Maybe I should emphasize that this is classical configuration. And this is the fluctuations around it. And now we could just have picked the model originally so that take g s naught squared fixed limit and g s naught goes to 0. So we will pick g to be very small so that the fluctuation terms get suppressed, but the term from the classical field configuration stays. Maybe this is a bit technical. This is kind of like how it works in for all fields, I guess. We have a classical field configuration, and this is what we usually say is happening to our quantum system. But very technically, that classical field is also quantum, and it has small fluctuations, which introduce noise. But by taking the coupling between the two fields very small, we can suppress that. We could suppress that noise. That's why things like QED and gravity, which have small couplings, we actually see them on the large scale as classical fields. But things with larger couplings, like QCD, don't have like a natural field. Interpretation. Okay, so what does this mean? It means I can ignore all of this. So that's good. We basically almost have the Lagrangian that we want, except that I made an assumption on S. What assumption did I make? I assumed that it obeyed this relationship, because that is what made all of these cancellations possible. For those familiar, I perturbed around a solution to like a extrema to the classical action. So it's not quite this model, because this model we are totally free to choose the space and time position. But here it's more realistic, because you know, in real life, once we pick an initial field configuration, it evolves according to how it evolves. You know, we try to fix this in the lab by having an external device that lets us control the field, but the whole point of this construction is to build that external device. But we can get around this problem by instead of choosing J to be space-time dependent. Well, we could certainly choose the initial field configuration to be whatever we want. So we'll choose S naught to be Si omega t minus x dot x, x dot k. This is just the most general solution to that equation. But omega k is equal to k squared plus m squared. And if we take the non-relativistic limit, that's k squared plus order m squared, k squared over m squared. So we will pick, we will only excite wavelengths that are much smaller than m. So this piece we can ignore. And that means that this is equal to e to the minus I mt s naught of x at time 0 for any function that we choose of space. And that means that s naught squared is equal to s naught of space and time is equal to the same thing it was at time 0. So what did we do? We managed to get this term in the Lagrangian to be, we managed to get the Lagrangian to be the phi to the 4 Lagrangian plus or minus a potential of our choice that's not time dependent. OK, so this is the most technical part and also where you know the main result is kind of. So maybe I should stop and ask for clarifying questions. Yes?
So I guess I wasn't sure why the limit allows you to throw away all the terms involving delta.
Right. So delta S is a small fluctuation. So it's order one. I can take G. So I pick the original theory. I get to pick the original theory. Why that's justifiable, let's forget for a second. I pick the original theory G such that this thing is order one, but this thing goes to zero.
Yeah.
So that will get rid of this, because again, phi is also a small fluctuation. It's a field perturbed around the background.
Uh-huh.
So the only large thing is S naught. So we have G and a GS naught term that goes to zero.
Okay.
This will only matter if phi actually gets coupled to delta S, but it doesn't because again we're taking G small. But now there's no S naught term to offset the.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. This is exactly why we get like classical couplings to fields, because the coupling is small and these terms are suppressed. In reality, we don't get to pick G small. So that means at some point, we're going to start feeling those effects. But for large enough values of the field, we only see the classical value. Assuming we also would decrease our sensitivity to be of order there.
And you're allowed to pick your whatever field theory you like because ADS C of T is supposed to hold.
So, good.
Or arbitrary field theories? Or?
Not arbitrary field theories, but it is true that we can control the parameters in ADS C of T. We can control the coupling strengths. We can control various, for particular known models, like let's say n equals 4 superangles, I can decrease the coupling strength by taking G Newton very small. I mean, that will decrease the coupling strength of everything. But for more complicated models, I can play with the relative interaction strengths of the fields with each other. Yeah. More generally, if we want to make use of this for other things, you could say, OK, well, in nature, we just have some fixed but small coupling G. So the fact that we're so these terms are still there. And what do? They contribute error. So then you actually have to, I will discuss the computation part in a moment, but then you actually have to start building a fault-tolerant machine that gets rid of the errors that are introduced by the fact that you ignored these parts of the field theory.
Could you explain again why it's important that S naught is independent of time?
Or
the norm.
It will become clear when I continue the construction. But the result is that we can get it to be time independent for amount of time parameterized by how small g is.
Okay, maybe it's an naive question, you're going to say later, but can you remind me again? So the computation you're actually going to do is now by setting the potential. Like let's say you want to do some computation on two qubits, you're going to change this potential, and then it's being done in this field.
So the potential we got is time independent. So we need to figure out another way to do the computation. And that's why this Preskill Jordan et al. Model will not be enough. We're going to have to introduce multiparticle quantum walks.
But would it be clear if you had that model, it would be enough?
Yes, and in fact, in the unlikely case that this is a real problem, you can actually introduce another field, and you can boost it. So you can start. This is in 1+1 dimensions. So you can start in 2 dimensions and have one potential that confines one of the fields to essentially one dimension, and then a second field that it's like this time-independent field, but I can boost it. So I kind of encode a movie into it, and like this film is boosted through the one-dimensional one-dimensionally confined field, and that probably will let us actually end up getting this effect. Yeah.
And then something else. Would it be like? Can you say that these things happen reasonably fast? Like. What if it takes very long to do this? Then it won't be an attack on QPV, right?
Right. So I mean, it all depends on the parameters that you pick for the model. So I believe we can discuss this later. That in a I'm not quite sure. I think other things are going to go wrong with possibly other things will go wrong in holography. But there's no obvious reason why I can't scale these parameters so that it fits into the. So hopefully now it's going to be a bit. Maybe I should keep that. Now we're exiting this territory. We're going back to non-relativistic quantum mechanics. Hopefully that should be a bit more familiar. Okay, so what do we have? We have the following Lagrangian, 1/2 phi box plus m squared phi minus lambda phi to the 4 plus j of x phi squared, where we get to pick j. So now we take the non-relativistic limit, and we get n non-relativistic bosons from intro quantum mechanics xi plus xi minus xj. But we can't immediately use Preskill et al.'s result because this is now time independent. So we need a cleverer trick. And we propose the following trick, which is that we simulate a multiparticle quantum walk. So look at my notes. Okay, so this is a very interdisciplinary talk. So every time I jump from one topic to another, it will always confuse someone. Now we go to something that's maybe more familiar to people who have like studied condensed matter. So there's this thing called the tight binding approximation, which is that if I have a potential like so, this is J, this is X. And I look at the effective Hamiltonian, and the characteristic height of these potential wells is V, and the length is L, then for V naught L large, we get an effective Hamiltonian, Well, let's imagine we just start off with one excitation on this system. So let's imagine we have just one particle. Okay, what is one non-relativistic particle in its ground state, or approximately its ground state, going to look like? Well, it's going to be some excitation. Okay, well, okay, the real ground state will be some superposition, but this will be very close to a ground state. So if we take just the set of states in which each one of these wells is excited to its ground state, then the effective Hamiltonian, just on that subspace will be the Hamiltonian for a quantum walk. So n is equal to 1, h effective of u in e, u v plus v u, for some t and some energy term that doesn't matter. And why do you expect it to be like this? Well, this wave packet here will have some tunneling amplitude to go into the next well, but it's exponentially suppressed. And so the probability of it in one time step going to two wells over is doubly exponentially suppressed. So we could take the limit where the Hamiltonian only considers one step at a time. So that's a single particle quantum walk. And it's also true that in the multi-particle case, we're going to get the Bose-Hubbard Hamiltonian. U comma v, there's going to be some graph with one vertex for each potential well. And the vertices are connected if the potential wells are next to each other. And so this quantum walk is summing over vertices, edges in this graph. Okay, so in the multi-particle case, the Hamiltonian is the Bose-Hubbard Hamiltonian. This is the number operator, so this is b dagger v bv squared. And this is the Hamiltonian for a multiparticle quantum walk.
And what's the graph?
It's the same graph that we that's over here.
So it's a line?
Yeah, just a line. If we pick a potential that's like this, and that's just true. You can't pick a potential like that. That's the tight binding approximation. It's, yeah.
What's the distance between the two? I mean, besides this number operator?
Right. So when I took this non-relativistic limit, this QFT Hilbert space, it's broken up into sections. with various particle numbers. So when I take the non-relativistic limit, I'm picking a particular subspace that has a particular fixed number of particles.
Okay.
So suppose I pick the subspace that has just one particle excited, then the effective Hamiltonian for that is going to be this quantum walk. And so that just this dynamic just hops the wave packet from one potential to the other, but there's no interaction. So, and that's what this n term is. If there was no n term here, then this is just a bunch of particles independently taking walks and never seeing each other's presence. But with this n, when they get close to each other, something is going to happen that will be useful for doing computation.
So how many dimensions are we working in? I mean, it looked like L is more than one dimension, but
right.
It's one dimension.
Yeah. Sure. I mean, right. So I can pick the graph to be any dimension less than L, right? So I could start off in a QFT in 3 plus 1 and end up with an effective Hamiltonian in one plus 1, or in a 1D graph, rather.
Should I think of that as you're in three dimensions, but it's constant in two other dimensions, so you just have sort of...
We're in three dimensions,
yeah.
But then in a just take a line intersecting through the 3D space and then build potential wells around that line that have like fixed radius.
And you could have taken a plane, but a line is going to be enough for what you want to do at some point.
A line was for this demonstration. Now we'll get a bit more complicated. But let's imagine, let's take the QFT to be in 3 plus 1. I think that's the most accurate. But this analysis could be done in any dimension. I think I have time to answer clarifying questions. Yeah?
This is basic. Should there be a dagger on the BU in the second part?
Yes.
Thanks.
Yeah, I think you, sorry.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't matter, they commute. Yeah.
Can they get into the reversal on the line?
Probably not. Yeah. I'm about to go over the construction which is universal, which will require a more complicated graph.
Psychic grid, I think.
I'll get to it in a second. It's a bit asymmetric.
This construction of Childs?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. It is planar, but it's not like a regular square graph.
Forgot how it is.
Okay. So this is the Hamiltonian for a multi-particle quantum walk. And now I will quickly go over how you get universality from a multi-particle quantum walk. I think this is good. And this is the Childs construction. So how does it go? First, if we pick a graph like this, it turns out that we can excite states that are like wave packets, so long as their extent is much larger than the, it's very large. So this would be something like, start with the zero state, and then around some site U, create a particle at every site V, but have a different have a different weight so that it's, you know, mostly local or localized around a specific point. I mean, this really is just discrete 1D quantum mechanics. And so you could get this wave packet to travel in a particular direction. And so the I should really cite. So this is archive 1205-3782. So we're going to, or Childs et al. Uses a dual rail encoding. So if they want to encode a zero, they will excite a wave packet on this rail of the graph. If they want a one, then they will pick a different rail. And they can get one qubit gates by introducing gadgets like this. So this will this creates, I think the basis changing gate, the Z to Y basis changing gate. And they could also build gadgets like this. And this implements a phase gate, so e to the minus I. I think it's pi by 4. Right. It only affects the one state, because if it was just a zero state, it wouldn't even see that this gadget was there. So that these two 1-qubit gates generate all 1-qubit gates. So all that's left to get universality is to show that we can get some non-trivial 2-qubit interaction. So this is a very high-level overview. I encourage anyone who's interested to go and read the paper, or we can discuss it in more detail afterwards. So this is all 1-qubit gates. And I guess I should also mention that these gadgets only work for excitations that have k is equal to pi by 4. You can excite wave packets with different momenta, just like in continuous quantum mechanics. And then for 2-qubit gates, you can very technically speaking, you don't interact the 2 qubits together immediately. You introduce like a data qubit and a mediator qubit. Mediator, and all the data qubits have k is pi by 4, so you can use those gadgets. But the mediator qubit will have to have a different momenta, and that's because you need to be able to route the 2 qubits to move onto the same track to intersect each other. And so you need to know what is the mediator qubit and what is the data qubit. And the way you encode that is by choosing a particular momentum. So you have a data qubit and a mediator qubit. And then there is some, there's some gadget that routes these two together. The graph here is very large. And so you'll get two, or if you're in the 1-1 state, you'll have two wave packets coming in. The switch will route them together. And then by conservation of momentum, if you have a wave packet with k is equal to pi over 4 going in this way, and a wave packet with k equals pi over 2 going that way, then you know that after the interaction, it has to be k is equal to pi over 2, k is equal to pi over 4, going in the opposite directions. But the one thing that's allowed to change is the phase, the overall relative phase. And so that will allow you to implement a controlled phase gate. It turns out that with some tricks, you can move the control phase gate from the data qubit and the mediator qubit to just be on two data qubits. And so then you have all single qubit gates on data qubits and all and controlled phase for some phase on two qubits, and that's enough to generate universality. Okay, so just to, yeah, that might have been a bit quick. Do people have questions?
But your graph is like many of these rails.
That's right, yeah. For every qubit, there will be two.
Somehow connect up with these gadgets.
Yeah. OK, I'll just recap really quickly what we've done. So the point is, I need to be honest. I forgot to talk over to explain what is it that we're still missing here. And the thing that we're missing is that whereas it's easy by symmetry arguments to get that when you have a potential a lattice of potential wells, that you get the Bose-Hubbard Hamiltonian, that is no longer true when you have these more complicated graphs. So it's actually not it's not clear yet how to design the potential wells so that you still get exactly the same hopping term. But this is only a problem for single qubit gates. For two qubit gates, because you're going to route them on this long line, then you immediately get from symmetry arguments that you get the quantum walk Hamiltonian. So there's still this engineering problem of this theoretical engineering problem of, for these more complicated gadgets, how do we get the quantum walk Hamiltonian to emerge from potential wells? So, I mean, there's so many parameters that you can adjust that it seems unlikely that you will not be able to engineer it, but that still needs to be fixed. In the worst case, we can move over to this Preskill construction where we boost one of the fields. So that was the honesty. Now let me just summarize what we've done. So again, the ultimate goal is to finally decide whether or not holography breaks QPV. And to do that, we want to make sure that you can actually build a universal quantum computer in the bulk. So step one is, well, how do you even build a quantum computer in QFT? That's the question we're answering here. And how did we do that? We took a QFT. We took a QFT with two fields. And we made one field very massive and the coupling very small so that we could set one of the fields in an initial state so that it will create an effective potential for the other field. And then particle excitations of the other field are the excitations that live on this potential. And we try to get to emerge from this, the Hamiltonian for a multiparticle quantum walk, which we know is universal. So that's the overall construction. And future directions are, of course, finalize this problem, but then also to pick a particular model of holography, write down the effective QFT for it. There are some models of holography for which you can do that, namely The most famous one is N equals 4 super Yang Mills, but there's other variations. And then once you have that QFD, start playing around with it and see if you could build a quantum computer there. OK, that's it.
Questions?
So I guess you didn't say, but beyond that, you want a dictionary to tell you how to translate what you can do with your quantum computer into a text on, specific text on QPD. Do you have any?
No. That's implementation details. It doesn't affect whether or not we actually solve this security issue. We already know you can get a protocol out of it if you can get a certain computation to occur in space-time.
Yeah, but it'd be kind of nice to know which protocol.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yes. Right, so ideally what will happen is that somebody comes out with a discrete model of holography that normal quantum information people actually trust, because it's just quantum mechanics and you can see that things work out. And then it has a bulk that is good enough to engineer a quantum computer in, and then maybe you'll just get a protocol and you won't really understand why, besides this, maybe this is the final understanding. But hopefully, you know, once we actually have that example, we'll actually see some simpler underlying mechanism. Or it's also possible we'll just figure out what that mechanism is on the quantum information side before this whole project ever finishes. Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess it's not yet there, but for the mapping between, if you encode like your QPV protocol in your setting,
mm-hmm.
You have your qubits flying in, and then there's a computer, and then they fly out.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not really a computation in the sense of BQP. It's more like a computation in the sense of like a quantum channel.
Mm-hmm.
Is it hard to get things flying in and out of the quantum computer you're building?
The way I like to think about how you get the QPV protocol from holography, you don't actually think about particles flying in and out. You just have the computer sitting there, and maybe it's worth. So the way I think about it is, so you have some interaction happening here. And so this induces two error-correcting codes. And you just need that the computer takes inputs at these locations and outputs them at those locations. They don't have to fly in and out. And that's more reasonable because that, you know, a computer can just move registers around. And so we start the protocol with Alice holding this left half of the CFD, Bob holding that right half of the CFD. And then just by the error correction property, you know that there's some operation that Alice can do to inject her input into that location. So you don't have to worry about engineering things falling in or out.
You have to think about flying from infinity first.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
I assume that we somehow managed to prove directly that QPV actually is secure.
Mm-hmm.
If you modify your work then to disprove the idiosync conjecture?
If nonetheless, if both QPV is secure and we find out that we can build these quantum computers, then I think, yeah, that would imply, you know, it's also complicated and, you know, there might be some caveat, but to me, the first order reasoning is that it would imply a contradiction, yes.
But, like, it could be the case that the field theories in holography are just happen to be such that you can't build a good computer and that saves the conjecture, even in the face of security.
Yeah, that's more likely.
Yeah, it's possible.
yeah.
Go ahead. Yeah.
So what do you think? Last time we talked was in Ghent, I think.
Yeah.
And then you were saying, well, it's QPV secure, you don't have to worry.
Yeah, so...
Have you changed sites or...
So
what?
When I first visited you guys in Amsterdam, I was on totally the side of QPV is insecure, holography is going to break QPV. And then later on, I discovered this this issue where when you take, so in order to get these QPV and holography arguments, we have to take G Newton very small. And I realized by talking to some high-energy physics people that in the standard models of holography, when you do this, the bulk interaction goes to zero. So the field theory is just free, which as far as you're concerned means that any operation you can implement is just a Gaussian operation, mm-hmm. which should be easy to simulate. And so that seemed for a moment to be the resolution. Okay, you can't actually build a universal quantum computer in QFT, because exactly as you try to stuff more qubits in, the clock speed of any computer you build goes down and down, so that it's always O1 complexity. But then Lenny, I had a discussion with Lenny where he introduced me to this flat space limit of holography, which is much more speculative and people don't study it as much, but nonetheless, there's strong evidence that it should be true. And in this flat space limit, you can still get the bulk interaction strength to be basically as large as you want, even as you take G Newton to be small. So it's possible that in that limit, some other thing will go wrong, you know, and then QPV will have won. But I'm agnostic at the moment, 50-50 as to what's going to happen there.
So maybe I'll comment there. Yeah. So my intuition here has always been that we think that our universe that we live in is holographic in some sense, and we find that in our universe we do have interesting particle physics, you know, particle interaction strengths that don't turn off as you make gravity weak. And so if you think that, you know, ADS CFT locally in the bulk on scales much smaller than is relevant, than the cosmological constant is relevant, like looks something like normal particle physics, then you're in the camp of the second possibility that Kabir is discussing, that, you know, there are ADS CFT models that have strong particle interactions, and then you can build some interesting computer. But yeah, it's less understood on the string theory side, which is interesting.
And do you think our universe is holographic? Why?
Because black holes have an area law entropy in our universe.
So there are some very strong conjectures, strongly believed conjectures. This is less strongly believed.
That our universe is holographic.
Yeah.
I hate to interrupt, but can I borrow the hockey stick for a moment? Because we don't have a pointer in the other.
Yeah. So the holographic principle as a general statement about quantum gravity, I think basically everybody believes, like loop quantum gravity people believe that, string theory people believe that. The loop people believe a weaker version of it, where it's true of the like effective field theory, low energy description, and the string theory people believe a strong version of it, where it's true like for all the degrees of freedom, even in the UV. It's some conjecture about how quantum gravity could work, but it's sort of a pretty widely accepted conjecture.
Okay.